This reading is a poem by Maya Angelou called Touched by an Angel. We, unaccustomed to courage, exiles from delight, live coiled in shells of loneliness until love leaves its high holy temple and comes into our sight to liberate us into life. Love arrives, and in its train comes ecstasies, old memories of pleasure, ancient histories of pain. Yet, if we are bold, love strikes away the chains of fear from our souls. We are weaned from our timidity in the flush of love's light. We dare to be brave, and suddenly we see that love costs all we are and will ever be. Yet, it is only love which sets us free.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy to be back with you.
Yay.
And yet, Mom is coming. I know my place.
Yes, Auntie.
Today is Mothering Sunday. I really love the term Mothering Sunday because so many of us mother and have been mothered by people who were not necessarily our mothers. And it is far more inclusive and speaks to the role of nurturing and comforting and teaching. So it's a day we honor the people from whom we learned how it feels to be loved. It's fitting that we acknowledge love rising in us at this time of the year because it's spring and the temperature is rising, although out here in the valley, the West Valley, it's not so sure if we had spring or if it's going to jump right to summer. Our plans for summer and even fall are rising up. You all are rising up to welcome Reverend Nika home with a high tea. This morning, I invite you to think back to Easter Sunday when many came to commemorate a story. For some people, it's the only time that they go to a house of worship, or one of the two times they go to a house of worship. But it's also a time to remember a story that is told in many different traditions. The rabbi, known as Jesus, had celebrated the Passover Seder with his colleagues, and then the next day had been executed. And his body was placed in a tomb on Friday, which is Sabbath Eve. And so the women came after the Sabbath, because you don't work on the Sabbath. They came to anoint the body, as was their traditional way, and to prepare it for burial. But they found that the body of their teacher was missing. He's not here. He's risen, the angel said. So my question for you this morning, as you bask in the warmth of the season, what is rising in you? What is rising in you? In seminary, there is an ongoing conversation about the historical Jesus and the mythological or mystagogical Jesus. A deeper look reveals the difference between the two are the questions that they answer. What happened then? That's the historical. And what does what happened mean? That's the mystagogical. There's the thing, and there's what the thing means. So the historical Jesus was a man who lived about 2,000 years ago who brought a revolutionary message to his people. Was a man who was killed by the Roman colonizers who experienced him as a tremendous threat to their power and to their control, the Romans' control over the Jewish people. This was a man who disappointed many of his own people because they thought he was going to free them from the Roman persecution. The historical Jesus was a teacher, a rabbi named Joshua. Now, the various translations from Aramaic to Hebrew to Greek and Latin and English morph the name from the Hebrew Yehoshua to Yeshua to Yesu to Jesus. The original name, Yehoshua, meaning Yahweh, that was the name of the God of the Hebrew people, Yahweh is salvation, God saves, is the same English name as Joshua. Jesus was not the son of Mary and Joe Christ. Christ means the anointed one, and in Hebrew, Christ means the same as the Messiah, the one who comes to save. He was this teacher, this rabbi, Yehoshua, foreshadowed in the Hebrew Bible, which some people refer to as the Old Testament, and lauded in the Christian Bible, which some people call the New Testament, and even mentioned in the Quran. And so those of you who like to do your Google searches or have a conversation with ChatGPT can ask for the references to the nativity story in the Quran. So Yeshua was a radical rabbi. Perhaps he was the leader of a religious movement. He was not, however, the founder of a religion. He was a teacher. He was a Jew. He was a rabbi. 100 years after his death, not the next day, the next week, the next month, 100 years after his death, teachers and writers reinterpreted his teachings, the teachings of Rabbi Joshua, that had been passed down orally. So it was the oral tradition that these lessons were passed down. They weren't written in red letters that you'd find in some Bibles today. And 100 years after his death, meaning was imposed upon his life and his death. And they were morphed into the religion that we now know as Christianity. So if religions are named for their founders, we would more accurately call the religion associated with Rabbi Yeshua as Paulinism, rather than Christianity, because it's through Paul's teachings and interpretations that we come to know the mystagogical Jesus, the Jesus that connects followers to the mysteries of their Christian faith, the Trinitarian God, salvation from sin, the miracles performed, and the signs and symbols of Christian beliefs, all, none of which we Unitarians have to deal with. But wherever you focus on the mysteries or the history, the teachings of this renegade rabbi have meaning for us today. Because Rabbi Joshua reinterpreted the 613 laws of the Jewish people. Now, most of us know the Ten Commandments because we live in LA and we watch movies and we've seen the movie. But we can more accurately call them the first 10 commandments because there were 603 more, and if you don't have enough things to do in your life, you can open your Bible and count them. These laws are known today and still followed by Orthodox Jews. Rabbi Joshua distilled the 613 laws into two. Love God, however you define God, but in those days, God was defined as this mystery called Yahweh. Two, love your neighbor. This was a radical shift from the laws of retribution to compassion. Yahweh said, an eye for an eye. You punch me in the eye, I'm gonna punch you right back. Joshua said, return hatred with kindness. Respond to wrongdoing with compassion, which is really hard to do. This radical thinking, even today, It's difficult, but this is why movements like reconciliation and restorative justice are on the edges of our culture, not in the center. Yahweh said, "You shall have no other gods before me. I, Yahweh, am a vengeful and jealous God," which, if you think about it, is a very interesting thing for a God to say when the world was allegedly monotheistic. But we're not even going to go there. Joshua said, "Love God, one God. Love with all your heart and your mind and your strength." In other words, Unitarian words, love this universe, known and unknown. Love all that is in it. Love the creator. Love the creation. However you define those things, love, honor, respect this place and its inhabitants. Now, 613 laws distilled into two. Joshua said that the second commandment is this: love your neighbor. Now, we could take some time to define neighbor, or we could just fall back on what Mr. Rogers told us, who, by the way, was a Presbyterian minister, one of the fine ones. But let us say that our neighbors are the people around us, whatever that means to you. More importantly, the rabbi said, he said, love your neighbor, but he said, love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. Don't hate yourself and love your neighbor. Love your neighbor the way you love yourself. This means there is an expectation that you're going to love yourself. That love is called self-compassion. Now, if you have no true love for the being that you are, if you have no compassion for the person that you are growing into, then it will indeed be difficult to love your neighbor, however you define your neighbor. But it's a goal. It's an inspiring aspiration. If we were already there, loving our neighbors and loving ourselves, already perfect, there would be no need for any prophet or any religion or any religious movement or fellowship. But here we are, trying to be good Unitarians, putting love at the center of our lives, taking the time to parse what loves mean. Is it erotic love or filial love or agape love or Unitarian love? As we live into the values of our liberal religious movement, love, however you look at it, is a revolutionary concept. So my friends, what is rising in you this morning? It could be a sense of outrage and fear, curiosity about what's coming next in this crazy world we're in, affirmation that what you have felt is now being expressed and acted upon by those in power. Perhaps what's rising in you is wonderment and concern that you should be doing something, something more, something else, something different. Love of the mystery that's called God. Love of self, love of family and community that is expressed in action of some kind. Martin Niemöller, who was a German Lutheran pastor, and after witnessing and initially participating in the rise of Nazism, wrote, "First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out." You've heard this. "Because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I wasn't in a trade union. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me." Let us remember, love is a verb. Love is action. You may applaud, you may protest, you may work, you may pray. As the warm air of spring rises up and the flowers bloom and the sap rises in the trees, let your love rise up. Let your love for the Creator and created be seen in all you do and all you say. Because love, however you look at it, is a very revolutionary concept.